Welcome, everybody. Last session, I think, for the bar, the pub quiz, the whiskey tasting, etc. So everyone's probably sitting here. We have a talk about unmasking the bullshit in cybersecurity. There's a lot of words, mentionings, whatever, a lot of bullshit in cybersecurity. Even the word cyber is questionable. We want to make this an interactive session, so we have some bold statements every now and then, and we're hoping to get the interaction. We have an opinion, probably you guys also have an opinion. If you think it's way too far, the red flags are still there, I think. So you can still try to wave them. Yeah, let us introduce ourselves up first. My name is Ronald Kingma. I'm one of the founders and a security specialist within Access42.
Jasper Dijkgraaf, security consultant, and they hooked me up because of the bold statements, but that's obvious.
Dylan Westlink, I am a pen tester at X42.
Yeah.
So I always enjoyed watching all the talks, and this is actually my first time on the stage, so bear with me.
It's also for us as Access42, we sponsor Hacker Hotel for quite some years now, but this is the first session we do here. Because normally we try to hide and just drink beers and listen to other people talking. Yeah, the bullshit in cybersecurity. There are a lot of things happening in cybersecurity, and if you listen to marketing and sales, everything can be solved, and there is a lot of solutions. We have firewalls which will help you make Fort Knox, whatever. And even the way we try to hire people, employees, personal, how we hire them and how we search for them. And looking at the firewall part, I think the Chinese or the MIVD, whatever, showed us that things are not as Fort Knox as we expect it to be. Fortinet is the...
So everybody knows about the legendary unicorn. It's very common to see job listings with like very unrealistic asks. So they're looking for a newly graduate person who's experienced for at least 5 years in the field of InfoSec. OCP is always a must. It's good to have, nice to have, but expectations are way, way, way over the reality. That makes it very difficult for young persons to get into the field and actually get out there and do what they love.
Yeah, and I think cybersecurity is it's always on the edge between people, process, and technology. Still think cybersecurity is a big part is technology. And there was a vacature?
job listing, I guess.
job listing. It was last week in the news, or this week. Sorry for the Dutch, but it's looking for an advisor for political work field within cybersecurity. And I noticed it because Fleur van Leusden, I don't know if you know her, she's the CISO for the Kiesraad, ask questions about it, because most of the things they were asking for were not technical, or not even cyber. It was just about how processes work and how organizations work, etc. And especially the last part is you're willing to invest in cybersecurity knowledge, and you are able to adapt fastly to become an advisor for all different angles and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but basically, yeah, you want someone for a job, but you ask for the wrong stuff a lot of times. That's how we see it. I don't know how you guys, girls, women, whatever, see them.
Yeah, it's almost like the high-paying jobs. They ask for like management capabilities, and that's useful. That's needed. But they don't really look at the technical background of the persons. And I think the best, for instance, a CISO, the best CISOs, they worked in the field, they have the technical knowledge to actually make the decisions. But it yeah. seems like it's less important these days.
Yeah.
But that's maybe how we see it. Are there people who want to respond on that one? I did expect so.
Stereo.
Yeah.
The CISO should be a business guy and not a technical guy. We've got a technical CISO.
I agree, but you need someone who understands both worlds to actually do the translation. There's a gap, and you can say, okay, we have a security officer filling that gap, but we do see a lot of, there is a gap.
But some kind of confirmation opinion. That you need also the technical part, and you combine it with two people who do the job. So that's a way how to solve it, I think. Other people? Yeah.
Well, you say like the CISO should be a business guy. I can tell you from experience, unfortunately, that a lot of the times when we have a CISO that is only a business guy, that he really doesn't understand what is technically required to implement or to make specific choices. So I have heard CISO say, let's go cloud only because that will fix everything. But they don't understand that it's just some other environment which you also need to secure. And they don't understand that there's still a part of all devices to manage.
The cloud doesn't exist. It's just exactly. Someone else's computer.
Exactly. So you really need to have someone that has both the technical knowledge but also understands the business aspects. You cannot just have a business guy doing this.
Thank you.
So the skill gap, that's another huge topic in info security. It's mostly about the perceived skills gap. You got one way around. I think everybody knows this person. So the classic case of a charlatan.
Oh, I see a red flag.
Oh, yeah. Huge red flags, agreed. Yeah, but that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the imposter syndrome. So you have a few different stages of it. Myself, if I'm speaking from my own experience, when I actually got into the field and started working professionally, it was sort of turning a hobby into work. And it made it very difficult because you got to go to clients, you got to explain them, you got to advise them. And you do know you got the technical knowledge because you learned it on the job. You had the right people around you who teach you all the fine details about the assessments. But still, you do feel like you don't know the technical details. But it's a thing, it grows with experience, it comes with the years. So the other part of the imposter syndrome is actually at this stage where you feel like you have the technical knowledge and the confidence, but it's on a slight decline because you're getting older and it's getting more difficult.
Older
reference. He might be able to speak from experience.
Yeah. And then you have the thing called salary. I think everyone got their monthly thing. I look at it from both sides. I mean, I'm one of the owners of X42, so basically I have people working for me and I have to pay them. But you have expectations. You have people, juniors getting in, they expect very high salary. If I pay someone very high salary, I'm also expecting them to be very professional, very senior, etc. That's all about expectations. And the other way around is, if I have high expectations, I should also pay them enough. And what I see in the market at the moment is it's slightly out of sync. It's not correct anymore. I see a lot of juniors trying to get very high salaries, starting from 6,000-7,000 euros a month. Also for them, the growth path to the future is not there. I think it will be flat. For normal, if you start, you get a salary, and then you have a
curve.
Yeah, a curve, a growth path. If you start very high, the growth path will eventually stop, I think, because you have to be profitable.
Yeah, or you gotta go to another company. Yeah. I mean, job hopping is still a thing. So,
how do you think about the whole salary and expectations? everyone is happy.
So it's apparently in sync.
Yeah. Then we have the certification race. Spoke with one of our friends today. He is actually doing the whole alphabet, starting from A to C, to get all the certifications done. But the whole certification race is also something. If you don't have CISSP, then you're probably not good enough. If you don't have the OSCP, you're not a hacker. Anyone with CEH here? Certified Ethical Hacker? Oh, yeah. And then they have the hackers, like Dimi. <Demi. laughs> Yeah. Version 5, 6. Yeah, but there is a race for certification. Companies are asking for more certifications. Then you have compliancy. We're doing penetration testing, and we're now certified via CCV. Then we're allowed to perform penetration testing somehow. But basically, it's all a check in the box. It does not actually say a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah, you need a certification to be able to go to an assessment alone.
Yeah.
I mean, it does kind of confirm your processes are in the right direction. But still, it doesn't say that much about the knowledge in-house. So,
no, in my opinion, it's good to have some kind of baseline to state, okay, if you are performing penetration testing or in the field of cybersecurity, you should have some kind of baseline, for example, for certifications. But looking at the CCV, for example, that's a mixture between the ISO 9001 and the ISO 27001. It does not show in depth. Questions we got, can you show us the Nessus output you have for the pen test? So, yeah.
But the thing is, if you look at it from the other way around, customers need to decide on some kind of
stamp.
Yeah. Yep.
One thing that I have with certification is that people learn a lot of details.
Yeah.
But what makes them a good engineer or a good security guy is to be able to combine them.
Yeah.
And make sure that you, from that information and knowledge, pick the right things. And that's, I think, nearly impossible to put in some kind of certification. So that's, yeah, what's the real value of certification against the qualities of the engineer?
I will get to compliance later. Yeah, and then there's the what if I told you so. I think most of us work for companies in the field of cybersecurity. We advise our customers on what they should do, etc. But most of the times it's a money thing. There's no budget to do stuff, or they say, nah, it's not going to happen to us. We're small, or we are not a target. And then something does happen, and then suddenly everyone is a matter suspect or an expert in the field of cybersecurity. Look at when we had COVID, sorry, suddenly everyone was professional virus expert. Yeah. But basically, if something does happen, everyone is an expert and everyone is stating, okay, see, I told you so, you should do something. And basically, this is the part, if something does happen, then at the end of the day, they will probably get the project done, buy the stuff, whatever is necessary. It also starts with the request for proposals. You probably all know the request for proposals. Maybe some of you also have to answer them to make a bid for it.
I think that's related to what mentioned earlier, like, okay, how do you recognize the quality of people? They have a stamp. But how do you recognize it? And within a tender, you need to send questions and you need to confirm. But how do you really find out the quality of the service you are going to obtain?
And what we see here is a lot of garbage in, garbage out. If you ask for garbage, you get garbage. I have one example of a RFP. The company name is made anonymous.
Give us a hint.
I probably you worked on it, but read it. I won't read it for you. You
it was also copy paste. Yeah. First reactions?
Yeah, you, totally true.
Answer yes.
Yeah. What do you think of it? this is complete bullshit.
Want to respond?
They're going to be very unlucky.
Yeah.
Maybe they are already.
Yeah.
But they don't know.
Sorry? Yeah, but this financials, he was stating they're just scoping financials, but it's not only financials, I think. You should also look at the risk, the real risk, what it does.
And the risk that you now put your company in by publishing this publicly.
Yeah. Yeah. A company.
Yeah, and the thing is, we responded to this by contacting the CISO to have a conversation about this. And he just mentioned, we never want to talk to you guys again. Job done.
Yeah. Then you have the culture of fear. When I started with Access42, we also had a lot of conversation with customers. You say, okay, you know, it's not if you are hacked, it's when you are hacked, all that kind of stuff. But it's all about fear, and I don't think the culture of fear is the right culture anymore. We should advise them in a different manner, not on fear, what can happen to you, but show them more the risk and not tell them the fear story.
But that's related to business.
Yeah. How is it different? He asked. I think
it's in the budget. Usually, when you make the manager scared of the risk that actually can happen, they might be able to get more budget and spend more attention to actually securing the company. Yeah. But most of the times, it is way more efficient to actually sit together with, for instance, a developer, depending on the assessment. But go to the choice they made, the design choices, and actually, you can even, some sort of light purple team ID. I think that's efficient in most of the cases, and it also speeds up the test because you know where to look.
Yeah, and I think awareness is higher than it used to be. There's a lot of breaches mentioned in the newspapers, on the news, or whatsoever. So companies are hopefully aware what can happen. Still, there are companies stating, "Oh, no, that's not going to happen to me. We're small. We're no target. We're whatever." Then you have the blame game. So eventually, something really does go wrong, etc. Who to blame? Most of the times it's the CISO, I guess. He was responsible. but looking at the breaches... Yeah, sorry.
Question over here.
Well, you of course blame everyone except for yourself.
Yeah. No, you have to be honest and look in the mirror and state, okay, if I did it, okay, I should...
Well, what you see mostly, like especially with a bit of bigger companies, is that they often have an external IT provider, which they are then start to blame.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're right. I mean, sometimes they're really bad IT service providers, MSP, out there. But more often, what you see is that also there, it's a game of cost cutting because I don't want that new server. I don't care about that new firewall. I don't care about like having any type of monitoring because it's not happening to me.
Yeah.
And that's also, it's really a cost thing. And the fun is like when you actually explain like, hey, this is what's going to be the business impact if you cannot do your normal operations anymore. And then, of course, you have to have a company that listens. But if you have that company, and then hopefully you can open their eyes and make them make the right choices. But it's a very hard discussion often.
Yeah. Yeah. True. And most of the times what went wrong was a mixture between technique and human design errors.
Exactly. That's why it should be a business person, because you have to talk business opportunity. You need that new server. It's going to be awesome. You're going to make so much money. And by the way, we're going to secure that for you. Now, I hire these guys, so I write RFPs.
But in the end,
not this one, I hope.
I do earn a connection that we all need to do it together, don't we?
Yeah. And then there's the other end. I noticed that last time there was a lot of discussion with the Dutch footballer, the KNVB. When they got ransomware and they eventually paid for it, a lot of people were blaming, oh, if you pay, you keep the criminals alive and all that kind of discussions. But basically, if you are the victim of a ransomware attack or whatsoever, you cannot blame the victim in this part, in my opinion.
Oh. Yeah. you can hold it.
Thank you.
Keep it.
Well, we oftentimes, because we do incident response as well, we have that discussion as well with the customer. And yes, you are a victim, but it's we always say, like, hey, it's like a house that you have and you left the door open. Nobody is allowed to come in.
Yeah.
But your insurance will not pay if you leave the door open. So you have both a responsibility, not only for leaving the door open. Yes, you are a victim, but if you have other, if you have like stuff laying around of other people that's not yours, like other people's data, you have a responsibility as well. Yes, you are a victim, but you also need to take a responsibility.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because some people, some companies invest in next-gen firewalls, all the latest and greatest tools and measurements, but if people are going to walk out and open the door for them, yeah, it's still an awareness issue.
Yeah, most of the time, it's about, it's not even about vulnerabilities, because it's yes, it's about awareness, but it's also Mike. About Mike. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's most of the times, vulnerabilities are not even required to penetrate a company. You see, that's often, yes, it's awareness, but it's also technical limitations, which are not put in place to protect people from themselves, like network segmentation, but also like having good hygiene for like the stuff that's configured. So it's not one thing that you can just like a magic bullet to fix it. It takes a lot of stuff, technical and human.
So the movies versus reality. Everybody knows the great movies, sneakers, Swordfish. All those movies make it seem great, hacking. People might want to get involved in hacking if they see it. But to be fair, it's a lot of banging your head against the wall and getting depressed and going to sleep and try it over next time. Sleep? Okay.
But depressed?
Yeah, very depressed. Wake up and try again. So it's not that glamorous, but if the passion is there and you will put in the work and actually learn, it's going to be fine. It's going to be nice. You need to surround yourself with people who are like-minded and also with the same passion. And that's how we get such a great community.
Yeah. The next thing is the cat and mouse game. Who is up? Is it the adversary? Is it the company who's well protected? It's always the cat and mouse game. What do we need to do? What do we need to invest in? How can we make sure we are secured enough? How do we verify if we're secured enough? And how do we get the latest threat intel on what is the adversary doing? So the whole cat and mouse game is something which will always be there, I think.
Yeah, and it's not even only the adversaries, it's also clients. If you keep them updated, I like being very transparent and mention every finding, at least at the end of the day. You just go over the stuff you found. It might happen that they overnight fix something critical and kind of screw up the assessment. So that's also a sort of a cat and mouse game.
And also, the like mentioned before, the moving towards the cloud stuff, etc. The cloud is complicated. It's difficult. It's not as easy as people think. We just pick up our servers, put it in the cloud. Now there's a lot of configuration work happening there. I was in the United States last week. Also got some insights on AWS where they showed their architecture for parts of them. It was really complicated. So one fuck up there, and yeah. That's it. And that brings me to the next part, that identities are the new vulnerabilities. it's also a statement. Do you agree on that one, or?
What do you mean by identity?
Identity is
sorry, repeat the question, please.
The identity, it can be an account, it can be something which gives you access to data, an application, a service, or whatsoever. That's an identity. That can be a normal Active Directory account, it can be a service account, it can be anything which gives you access to. And sometimes you use vulnerabilities to get to an identity. If you exploit a vulnerability, basically that piece of software you exploit runs as a service account or system account, whatever. So your identity, sorry?
Hopefully.
Yeah. But your identity then is that account. But from there, you move forward and find the identity you need to get to the data or the application or whatever you want. So it's not only on vulnerabilities, it's also about identities. And if you look at the cloud like AWS Azure, there are a lot of identities there, and a lot of identities with way too much rights.
So what's a vulnerability?
Sorry?
What's a
vulnerability? Oh, that's a new, that's the new, the new part.
No comment.
Yeah, that was a trick. Some tricks.
Yeah, I typed it last night, so probably there was. I had a small beer.
Some tricks to find out if everybody's awake around this hour. It's sharp.
Yeah, and then you have the overload of alerts, the fatigue of alerts. We get a lot of alerts. I think are there any SOC analyst kind of people here? Okay, I was expecting them some more or less. Now, what we see, you get a lot of alerts. You have a lot of systems, you have your firewalls, you have your servers, you have your network, your switches, routers, whatever. They're all generating alerts, and it's a nightmare on alerts. It also brings me to the next slide, that's kind of bold. All the things we do with alerts, it's basically on logging. We put it in a SIEM. Probably some of you work with SIEMs. I'm stating SIEM is dead. SIEM, the normal SIEMs we use are based on an antique base, like the old antivirus. It was based on signatures, so if it looks like a duck, it is a duck. The SIEMs are working on like the same way. We put in all the logging. What they did is actually put some machine learning on top of that and try to get some information out of it. After an incident, what you see is that the incident itself will be detected afterwards. And afterwards we notice, hey, we did have the logging. We could see it did this up front. But because the SIEMs are still more or less like the old school antivirus, we're not capable of getting all the information up front. That's why I state SIEM is dead and we need to move forward and do other things.
Is that things are in the logs but are not detected?
Yeah.
So if you have an incident and then afterwards you're gonna analyze what's in the logs, you find but shit, it's there.
Yeah.
And why did we miss it?
Yeah. And then you build a new use case particularly for that incident.
And the next time you miss the next one.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. That's basically what's happening. And you do have all the logging, but
so recognizable.
Yeah. that's an issue.
Acceptable risk.
No mic needed.
Except, compliance, that's more or less about acceptable risk. But compliance is also a strange thing. This guy is compliant. He's wearing his helmet, and that's enough to wear on the motorcycle. This is security, wearing the whole suit, etc. One of them is actually me, you guess. No, but there's a different compliance. It's not the same as security. I think we all agree on that one, hopefully. Compliance is basically, are you doing the right things and all that kind of stuff. Security is more in depth. How do we really secure? And sometimes you need to change your compliance to become more secure. Then there's the next slide. I don't know, all of you were also at the previous session? So try to be careful on this one. I think we are all equal. It doesn't. That's the gender gap. Some of them, some of these parts were also mentioned in the previous session. It's strange, in my opinion, that if a man or a woman or whatever does the same job, has the same knowledge and the same experience, etc., and there's a difference in salary, for example, that's strange. That should not be the case. The other side is if you look at, for example, Twitter, and there's a nice girl showing up with a picture and stating, hey, I can spin up a VM, the whole cybersecurity world is applauding and everyone likes her. And that's also a bit strange. If I do it, no one is giving me an applause. But yeah. But that's, and the previous session was way deeper on this subject and matter, and I try to be careful here. But it's strange that there is a difference.
Smart to be careful about
that. Yeah. Otherwise, I cannot come anymore. yeah, that brings us basically to the conclusion. So you can go to the bar, the whiskey tasting, the what was there? Yeah, the pub quiz. Bitterballen. I think we're in a really great field of work doing all the cybersecurity. We also during this session we had some fun, we had some laughter, but we also see there's a lot of bullshit, a lot of things which could we really better. And I think if we all work together, share the knowledge, to do the right things, we can actually make a difference at the end of the day. Any questions? Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah.
At the start, you said a few examples about the job offerings that they were basically written by managers and not by someone in the field.
Yeah.
What is the most ridiculous requirement you have met in job offerings?
Don't know if it was one from Deloitte or one of the other big fours. yeah, but they were actually asking for a security guy, but he also should be RERRA. The yeah, don't know what that had to do with. It should be an accountant role as well, and then yeah, that's totally not. But also, if you look at the certifications they ask for, if you see job offerings and they ask you need to have your certified ethical hacking, you have to what's the next one? The license penetration testing or something like that. A lot of things he said, okay, everyone can do it with a dobbelsteen and fill in the answers.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Anyone else?
Yes.
You're getting good in it.
Yeah, at the end.
So if SIEM is dead, what's next?
Next SIEM.
We need to move beyond SIEM and look more at in my opinion, we have to look more at the integration between all the different stuff. If you have, for example, EDR, NDR, and it can be hooked up. So you can call it SOAR or whatever. You can connect all the APIs and make automation do more for you. So you basically don't need the 24/7 eyes on the screen. You can automate stuff better. That will be a next part. You still need SIEM. SIEM is also there for compliance.
And business risk.
Yeah, and also business risk, etc. But looking at it more from a security perspective, you can do it on many different ways. And use the ecosystems of all the different vendors, all the different tooling you have, and combine that.
And I think in addition to that, if you're looking for a solution, I don't think that's the way to define what you actually need. You need to define the problem and then take proper actions. And nowadays, most of the time, they ask for a solution. But you even don't know as a sales guy what's actually the problem.
Yeah. Just like everybody needs a WAF.
WAF.
My dog does WAF. Now, yeah, that's true. WAF is also a layer of defense because we are still not capable of fixing vulnerabilities which are there for more than decades, like SQL injection.
It's also a little bit in the field of SIEM. One of the things that I'm experiencing in my daily operation is that, okay, we build a new product and we will want to bring it into production. And then, okay, we need to forward things to SIEM, to SIEM SOC.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what information do you want, guys? And then you get a list, what they want. And then that list is totally unrealistic about what logs, because usually log data can be produced by the system. And okay, but you ask for this, we cannot deliver that, but we can deliver this. Wouldn't that be more valuable to? And you get big question marks. So yeah.
Yeah, but that should also be if I don't know if that was an RFP thing, but if you put out a tender and you need the whole list of requirements should already be there. And that's what we see also with tenders, that a lot of information is missing.
Yeah.
They're asking for stuff. We also, I don't want to be commercial here, but we work with a EDR vendor. Every now and then we work on the tenders and then they ask for a next-gen antivirus EDR capable with signature-based scanning. Yeah. Then you totally miss the whole point.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that the whole revolution that we went through with project management, going from waterfall to agile, something similar should also happen to this field.
Yeah.
Because you don't know upfront what's going to be the total picture.
Yeah.
But you can try to along going the process, you can try to come to a complete picture.
True. That Thank you. Okay, I think then it's time for beers, bitterballen, another
pub quiz
stuff. Thank you very much.
Thanks.